Before I switched to Wealthfront, my APY was probably 0.1. Like, it was a joke.
I was literally getting pennies. Once I switched, cha-ching.
With the Wealthfront cash account, earn up to 4.2% APY on your cash.
The high APY with Wealthfront was a clear winner.
There are no petty fees.
Every month, there's this much that I'm getting in interest, and I didn't have to do anything. My money is working hard on its own, and I can trust Wealthfront is taking care of me.
Earn more on your uninvested cash with a Wealthfront cash account. No account fees, no minimums, and no strings attached. Get started today at Wealthfront.com. Clients were paid $1,000 for their testimonials, creating a conflict of interest. Outcomes vary. 3.3% base APY as of January 30th, 2026 is representative, variable, and earned on funds swept to program banks. 0.65% new client boost for 3 months on up to $150,000. Direct deposit $1,000 a month and fund an investing account for a 0.25% increase. Cash account offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, not a bank. Fees and eligibility requirements may apply to certain checking features of the cash account.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or Die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Welcome back in. Hour number 3 of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning. Streaming live on Periscope and on YouTube and on Twitch as well. Be listening this hour. We've got a queue to call for a chance for you to win a pair of tickets to see the Predators take on the Dallas Stars on Sunday at Bridgestone Arena. So we'll have that opportunity coming up for you a little bit later this hour. Right now, talking all things Tennessee Titans. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD. Teron, what's going on, my man? How we doing?
Hey, fellas, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. How would you describe the start of the season for your Mets so far?
You know, I want to have a physical conversation with Michael Conforto, man. I'll say that, you know, he's leaving a lot of runners in scoring position. I get you got to do what you got to do, but yesterday was embarrassing.
It was. I feel for you. Hopefully it gets better as they move forward here. The Mets and Rex Rhodes Tigers over here, it's a rough time.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, be glad you're not a Tigers fan.
That's right. So, TD,
hey, at least I still got Dom Smith, man.
That's true. That is true. TD, we talked earlier this week about Todd Downing, because obviously there's a lot of attention right now between Vrabel and Shane Bowen and that side of the ball. But Todd Downing stepping into a situation where you got an elite offense that you're taking over for from last year and a play caller that did a phenomenal job in Arthur Smith. Number one, how much pressure do you think is on Todd Downing as he steps into this new role? And what would you consider to be a success for Downing in his first year?
Yeah, I think there's probably – well, no, I think most of the pressure is on Shane Bowen, the defensive coordinator. But I think right after that, he's right there because, as you mentioned, he's stepping in for a guy who had that boat was full speed ahead going towards his target, 30 points a game. I mean, that's doing a lot. So – I think he's going to have to, you know, I don't know that he could be able to maintain that, but I think the main thing is going to be for that offense to have some type of balance. That's going to be important. I think it's going to be, I can't put a number on it, but they need to average at least 26, 27 points per game. And they, for the most part, just can't be the reason why this team is losing games, right? So, you know, they can't be losing games 17 to 14 consistently and expect Todd Downing to not get a side eye from the fans, you know, from the organization, et cetera. But I do think Coach Downing is in a good position to make it happen. So we'll just have to see.
So, TD, I'm assuming you know Jim Schwartz pretty well from your time in Philly when he was there as DC. What do you think of him? What do you think of this move? How do you view this move, you know, really, especially as it relates to Shane Bowen?
Yeah, as far as Jim Schwartz, the thing that I love most about him is the fire that he has and the way that his energy and how it comes off in practice. You know, and I've seen players firsthand just really just absorb that. I remember Jalen Mills when he first got to the Eagles that's one of the things that we used to talk about, man. He was like, man, Coach Schwartz is just so amped. He was like, I feed off of that. I love it. And I think, you know, that's something, obviously, as a defensive coordinator, you can really exhibit that. I'm not sure how much he's going to be able to do that in this current role, but the whole way everything is going, it's just I want to see if they have too many chefs in the kitchen, you know. And I've said it before, you know, you got two type A alpha personalities. I want to see how that blends, you know, between Coach Schwartz and Coach Vrabel. So when you just talk about what he brings to the table, though, I think he is going to have some fresh concepts, some fresh ideas. Not fresh like he's reinventing the wheel, but it's fresh to the Titans organization as far as how to get pressure with four guys up front. I think that's going to help. And just with him being so tenured, I think just getting that feel and instincts that he has, you know, from being coaching defenses so long, I think that could help on game day as far as when to dial up this blitz, when to go to this coverage or those type of things. And it's just another mind that is put into the mix.
I mean, knowing him, you're talking about that fire. He's well known for that. He's been, you know, he's been a DC or a head coach for 20 years. You know, one or the other in this league. Do you think that he can take whatever exactly this role is? But it's a secondary role, right? I mean, more of a consulting kind of role. Do you think that he'll be okay with that? I guess, or is it one of those things where you wonder if he, once you get into a season, into a team, you know, he may want more say.
I think he'll be okay with that, because one of the things I do appreciate about him is just how anytime you ask questions about personnel or you ask questions about, you know, overall team picture, when we did that in Philly, he always would say, well, you know, I'm the DC. Doug Peterson is the head coach. So, you know, you got to go to him. That's above my pay grade. And he would deflect that way. So at least on the surface, it didn't seem like that was an issue. Now, there were a few times where it came out that he and Doug Peterson may have had, you know, a couple of head bumps, but that's to be expected. I mean, you can't tell me a relationship in this world that ever existed that didn't have those. So I don't think it's going to be an issue. I think it's a matter of, like, he'll know his role. And I think really, you know, he initially wasn't going to be involved with football, to be honest with you. You know, so in this situation, this is allowing him to still be involved with the game at a high level, but at the same time, take a step back from where he was as far as DC and head coach, as you mentioned.
ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD, Teron Davenport, on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, TD, obviously earlier this week, Vrabel holds a press conference, and Shane Bowen is a popular topic of conversation. And Vrabel didn't really go about answering anything direct about Shane Bowen in that press conference, and that generated a lot of talk, as you're aware, on social media the next day. What did you think of all that? What did you think of the way that Vrabel continues to handle these press conferences regarding Shane Bowen?
Yeah, I think it just is showing us who Mike Vrabel is. Like, we know Coach Vrabel is very blunt. He's very direct. And he's going to do what he wants to do. So if he doesn't want to talk about something, he's just not going to talk about it. And I think we need to understand that. That doesn't mean that we need to accept it. But for me, like, that doesn't really bother me. It's water under the bridge. Okay, you made a decision, and that's like us asking questions isn't going to change Shane Bowen being a defensive coordinator. This is what this team has to work with. So for me, it's not really a huge deal. But for those that do have such an issue with it, I think the best way for Coach Vrabel to put it to bed is just, all right, the next time someone asks, just address it, say why, and move forward. I think that's really the only thing that he could do if he doesn't want to continue to be bombarded with these questions, to be honest with you. But, you know, it's just not something that for me personally, I don't feel disrespected when he doesn't say, you know, everything that's on his chest about Shane Bowen. It doesn't irk me the way it seems to irk others.
Yeah, well, no, and I agree. Like I've said this the other day, like John Glennon asked him about it, and the answer he gave, I wasn't going to ask about DC, but it was like, okay, well, I'm going to follow up on this because, like, maybe can be asked a certain way, and it'll get him to just say, like, basically, again, the question to me was just like, is there anything different? You know, is there anything different for him at all and from his duties? But you know, he didn't want to answer. He listed the staff. I mean, it is what it is, I guess. But I do think he creates more questions sometimes by taking that approach where, like you said, if you just say, here it is, this is what I like, thank you, goodbye, I think it would end some of that, and we'd ask him other questions he wouldn't answer. But anyway, so on the draft, TD, we're finally, I mean, we're still in mock draft. We're right in the middle of it, but it's getting closer here. Do you have any different feel for anything with the Titans? Anything raising your eyebrows at this point that makes you wonder what they might do?
Not really. I mean, looking back at BYU, you know, it was interesting that John Robinson was at BYU's pro day. That kind of stood out to me. I know they got Christensen, who was a pretty good offensive lineman, a really good tackle. That kind of stood out, but nothing really. I mean, it just continues to be more of the same. You know, they were at Minnesota's pro day. Rashad Bateman obviously is a guy at 22, so I think it's just kind of like pretty much the same. That the Tevin Jenkins report came out. I mean, I don't know how valid that is, but that could be not an issue, but that could be something else to take notice of as well. But nothing really to me.
Yeah, for those who don't know, that's the Oklahoma State offensive tackle, right?
Correct.
Yeah, who apparently is of high interest. But yeah, it is very much misinformation season too, as you know.
Exactly. And I just, you know, with him, I'm not so sure that this team would draft a guy that may end up playing guard instead of tackle. Like, there's no real set, okay, what is his position going to be? And I don't think they could afford to do that. So if they went for someone like Christensen, I could see that a little bit more, you know, in line. But I really don't think that they should draft a tackle early. Deontay Smith out of East Carolina is a guy that, you know, he showed off at the Senior Bowl. He had a really solid 2 years at ECU, you know, and I know that he would be a pretty good player. You know, I can't say I know, but I feel that he would be a good player. He could play right tackle. He's athletic, so he'll fit that zone scheme. And he loves football, you know, so you're not dealing with what happened with the last right tackle they drafted.
TD, last thing for you here. We've talked about this week the importance of the tight end position and finding a tight end somewhere in the draft. And you spoke with Brevin Jordan earlier this week on Talking with TD. What stood out to you about that conversation as you look at the Titans and balancing all the different needs that they have? How early do you think they could look for a tight end in the draft?
I think third round, late second, I think that's definitely possible. Brevin Jordan to me is one of the best fits, and Tommy Tremble, of course, as well. But what stood out to me in talking to him was just the energy, man. And it was funny because I felt like I was out there in the forest with a bear and just kind of like poking it to make it roar at me. You know what I mean? Cause I was just dropping different questions and he just was, it was sparking him to give some answers that I really liked and just like making him respond. And I love that, right? And you know, I just, his play as well, I think he's one of the most versatile tight ends in the draft. I know he didn't hit all the spider chart measurements and all that stuff, but, you know, end of the day, you pay the guy to play football, not be some type of Olympian. And I think that's something that has to be noted. And just the conversation just was really good, man. I love energy. I love people that bring energy. I love people that, you know, when I talk to them, I get excited. And he was definitely one of them. It was probably between he and Nico Collins, who's coming out next week on next week's show. Those were probably my two favorite interviews where I walked away like, yo, that was it. That was the one.
And you can check that interview out, the latest edition of Talking with TD. We'll tweet that out at 1025 The Game. TD, really appreciate you joining us today. Great stuff as always. Hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah, no problem. Appreciate you guys. And that edition, that episode has Tutu Atwell and a sign. on it too. So
absolutely.
Awesome conversation.
Absolutely. You can check that out. TD joins us every week here on Fridays at 8 o'clock. ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD. When we come back, we'll react a little bit to what Teron Davenport had to say there and also get back into the Vrabel and Shane Bowen discussion, where we bring up a conversation where he actually talked about Shane Bowen. We'll talk about that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. T-Mobile and 102.5 The Game are giving you and three friends the chance to win a stay-and-play experience at Hermitage Golf Course. Be listening today at 4:15 on Stillman & Company for the keyword to text into the game line at 615-737-1025. More details can be found at thegamenashville.com contest page. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well at 102.5 The Game. So we've spent a lot of time this week talking about Mike Vrabel and Shane Bowen and just how strange at times it's been in the press conferences. We talked to TD about it in the last segment as well. And basically what happened this week was Vrabel listed the depth chart of his coaching staff when asked about Shane Bowen and what was going to change with his role as defensive coordinator. But there was a time earlier in the offseason where Mike Vrabel actually did say something about Shane Bowen, this coming from a conversation that Vrabel had with a Q&A session with some Titans fans earlier in the offseason, and he was asked about Shane Bowen and why he was hired as the defensive coordinator. Here's what Titans head coach Mike Vrabel had to say during that Q&A session.
I know you worked through a lot of things after the season determining what you were going to do with your defensive staff. You looked at a lot of options. Tell us why you settled on Shane Bowen to formally lead the defense as the defensive coordinator.
Well, I think first and foremost, I think Shane is, qualified. He's very intelligent. I think he communicates well. I think he's got a great vision for what we want to do. I think he's always looking to improve, which that'll start with me and John and our organization. You know, we have to improve every year. That's what this business is about. I think Shane will do that. I think that the assistant coaches have to do that. And then obviously the players ultimately have to do that as well.
So that was Mike Vrabel earlier in the offseason discussing Shane Bowen and voicing some confidence in Shane Bowen and saying that, you know, that the staff's got to improve, he's got to improve. All those different things have got to take place. But Vrabel at least actually addressing Shane Bowen and the hiring that he made at the defensive coordinator position earlier this offseason in a Q&A session. Very different from what it sounded like the other day in the press conference.
I mean, there was at least some explanation of what he likes.
Just right, talking, exactly.
Like, you know, just talking about good Shane Bowen traits. Now, I cannot sit here and tell you that through the entire, like, last offseason, all through camp, things like that, that there wasn't some quote like that in a media session. Maybe there was. But that was pointed out to me, that fan interaction, and that he talks more after that, too, a little bit more specific about, I mean, we have time to run the whole thing, but a little bit more just, like, earnestly answering a question.
Yeah.
You know? Which is fine, but, I mean, again, like, I don't understand why it's hard to do that with us. Is it so? It's just because we're there, and then it's like, it changes the demeanor, I guess. You know, I mean, look, that's a different question than like what his duties will be. But I think what his duties will be is a pretty non-threatening question. It's just a basic question. So
maybe he just doesn't like y'all.
Well, I guess so.
That's what we've discovered. He just doesn't like
y'all. Yeah, we need to put together like a bracket of who Vrabel dislikes the most.
Yeah, you know? Maybe so. Well, like to TD's point, like it doesn't really bother me that Vrabel answers questions the way that he does. Like that's just what he is. It's not like this is the first head coach that we've seen operate this way. But I do think to your point, sometimes when you do that, you open yourself up to more questions and more, I guess, unnecessary chatter than you otherwise would if you would just address the question in some way.
Like, yeah, you prolong it.
I don't think anybody's really expecting Mike Vrabel to get in there and break down every single aspect of why he's hired Shane Bowen and made him the defensive coordinator and, you know, just break down. This is what I like about Shane Bowen. These are the five traits that really sold me on Shane Bowen to be the guy. Like, I don't think anybody's expecting that, and I don't think there's many coaches around the league, if at all, like if any coaches around the league that would do that. But, again, the way he answers it, I know it doesn't bother some people, but I do feel like if he would just address it in some way, a lot of these problems and conversations that we've had all week, they just go away. Like, you wouldn't even have to deal with it.
Yeah, now Jared has taken it to this week. Like, he thinks that stuff like this, escalates the move to the hot seat if things go poorly. So basically, like, if you act like this to media slash, and again, to media slash fans, because we're in between them, but we're the go-between, so it's still, I mean, this is all for people who want to follow the team. It's you're still talking to fans. If you act like this, this means that the seat gets hotter faster when things go poorly. You buy that?
Not really at the NFL level. Like, I think there is a certain degree of that in college, because I think that's more of a booster thing too that can affect you that way. So I think that happens more in college, where if you're combative and you're not getting along with people in the media or with your fan base, boosters hear about that and they're, I think, more willing to pull the plug at that point. I think that's just that's the case.
Well, they're part of it. Anyway, they're part of the fan base.
Exactly. So
they're stakeholders.
Yeah. So I think you see that more in college football. I think that's less of an issue at the NFL level.
Like when Butch Jones says brick by brick.
Yeah. Well, when Jeremy Pruitt starts talking about the first down marker, yes.
Yeah.
Or when Butch Jones is like, what do we want out of our media?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And oh, I forgot about that one. That
on the same one. Day that he's like, you know, Shy Tuttle fell on a helmet. Okay.
Yes.
This is the truth. Okay, Butch.
Okay.
Butch.
I can assure you that the gap is closing.
Yes. Thank you, Jeremy.
So, yeah, I know this will be a shock to you. I disagree with a Stillman take. Because I agree with you. I don't think that the actual true hot seat has anything like Amy Adams Strunk, if they go whatever, say they go 7-10 this year, you know, first of all, I don't think Vrabel would lose his job. I think he would be on the hot seat the next year. But I don't think that like Amy Adams Strunk, as she goes through the evaluations, like, and you know, I really wish he'd be better in these pressers. I think it's very simple. It's you perform and you can do whatever you want, and you keep your job, and you don't, and you know, then we can talk about it. And now I think that media maybe is less, and it shouldn't be this way, but it is, because we're all humans, gives less rope, less leeway to a coach who acts like this sometimes. I don't think I very strongly try not to be like that.
Yeah.
I don't think you should be like that, but we're all humans, and we are all biased, and we are not all actually purely objective. So in some ways, the conversation may be harsher going back at him, but I don't think that, unless you got a really weak owner, I don't think that matters.
When we come back, we'll get back into the Nashville Predators. Another big win last night, 7-1 against the Detroit Red Wings, a hat trick for Victor Arvidsson. We'll be joined by the legendary Terry Criss, Predators TV analyst. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porter with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. A gigantic win last night for the Nashville Predators, 7-1 against the Detroit Red Wings. They've won 11 out of their last 13 games. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in the legendary Predators TV analyst, Terry Criss. Crispy, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
Good morning, gentlemen. Doing great. Sun's up. Nice, beautiful, sunny day out there. I checked the news this morning, the sports news, and we did win 7-1. That wasn't a mirage. So I'm happy. I'm enjoying my coffee and just waiting for the next game to come around.
What did you think of that one last night, Crispy? I mean, you've got the start where Detroit takes the 1-0 lead, and then the hit later in the game that should have been a major boarding penalty that somehow got reviewed and downgraded to a minor boarding penalty, and then the Predators just take off from there offensively. What stood out to you about their performance? And a lot of pretty goals by the Predators last night.
You know what? The biggest thing that stood out to the performance to me was the team depth of the performance. Everybody. But we've been seeing that the last six, seven games now. that they're winding into more of a complete, like the coaches have been pounding the drums on, of playing the system, sticking with it. And if we get down a goal or two, let's stay with our system, keep pouring it to what we know we can do and keep doing it. And last night was probably one of the ultimate ones of that, for everybody participating in. Again, I guess everybody in our hockey world is the happiest for Harvey, because we always say he was snake bit and couldn't make it happen. Like, he had all these scoring chances, et cetera, et cetera. Last night, like, Grimaldi just exploded, had a great game. But I look back from Sorrell, and we got like three defensemen, like Davies and Ferentz and Lewington, all like sort of newbies on there, and yet they played their hearts out, played solid games for us. So taken away from that game was that I like what I saw of our team in their energy, in their work ethic, and how they just stuck to the game plan and stayed with it. That's what probably I like the best of all. And, the 2 points.
Right, yeah, exactly. So, Crispy, on Arvidsson, a guy who, you know, we were talking earlier on the show. I mean, a couple years ago, he has 34 goals and, you know, in 58 games. And, you know, the production is – slowed down quite a bit since then. I thought last year he looked banged up a lot of the year, and we saw like the speed. It looked like the speed maybe returned in the bubble. Where do you think he is in just in terms of his explosiveness and all the things about his game, you know, other than scoring? You know, because obviously, like you said, he has been snake bitten some this year, but do you think that he's still as explosive and speedy and dangerous a player?
Yeah, I think he's coming back into that now. I think the injury slowed him down a little bit. And not only physically, but mentally. When you get hammered like he did a couple times, it stays with you. It lingers. I don't care who you are or what you are. It takes a little while to get that out of your mind when you come back, whether it's a leg injury, an arm injury, or a head, or whatever. And then once you get through that part that says, you know what, it's not going to hurt now. Now I can get back to being me and to what my game is. And Arby's game is sheer hustle. I mean, that's how we call it, Mr. Hustle, because he has got speed to burn. He's on top of you. He makes spinoramas and turns once, comes back at you, turns around, comes back at you. He's like Grimaldi. And they use their speed, and they're just a pest out there. And everybody hates playing against a pest because you just keep swatting at him. He won't go away, and you can't hit him. And that's what Arvi was. But then suddenly he had that great year. And he was never, you know, was put in the lineup as a great goal scorer. But he had that season, so I guess everybody says, well, ooh, you score that 33, 34 goals, you can keep doing it. Well, sporting world doesn't work that way. And I think now Arby's getting back to his game. But you know what? Whatever he can get, he's going to take. But he got so many great – I said to Lindsay before the game, we were going over who we're going to talk about. One, and I said, you know what? Arby could have had 15 or 16 or 17 goals by now, this season alone, if he had buried the point blank. Not the maybes, not the perimeter shots, but the one where he broke through and got right on – missed a net, hit a post, or whatever. So that's one of the areas right now I'm really happy to see, and for him especially.
Predators TV analyst Terry Crisp on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Crispy, you know this. I mean, when things were going poorly earlier in the season, John Hines, he was getting a lot of heat. I mean, there's a lot of noise around him, at least from the fan base on social media, and they have completely turned this thing around. How much credit do you think John Hines deserves for the turnaround that we've seen?
I'm going to give him full marks, full credit, because he kept saying he kept an even keel. He never got excited. He never blasted anybody. He sat a few players down, had a talk with them. But every time we ever had our morning meetings with Coach Hines, he's always been up front, honest with us, telling us what he's trying to do, what he wants to do with the players. And he kept saying, they're going to buy in. The system will come through. We'll stay with it. We're working. And doing exactly what he wanted to do now. And they still have a few steps to do. He'd be the first to tell you that. But it's great to see that everybody now is pulling on the rope the same way. And he talked also the other day, and really a nice talk, about his coaching staff. He said, we got to know each other. He said, we were thrown together. He said, we hadn't seen it except for Dan Lambert. We're all new together. We're all having meetings. But we're not sure, you know, exactly how we're going to approach things. And now we are. Now we've sorted out who's where and what. And that's starting to show up in the penalty kill, the power play, go on down the line. So they've had time to do things that they wanted to do. And unfortunately, at the start of the season, we got behind the eight ball. But now they're digging their way out. They're doing their best. So it's going to be an exciting coming down this stretch run to see what happens, because we know we're in a dogfight right now for it. But right now, I like what I see of this hockey club.
If you were in his position, Crispy, knowing you have some very key, very talented veterans coming back soon, would you feel good about, hey, the standard has been set? Someone goes in the lineup, this is how they're going to play? Or would you be concerned about, like, the chemistry as it is right now with these young guys, the way they're playing, the hunger, that you would lose something when you change the lineup? How would you be approaching that and thinking about it?
You know what? I'm going to answer that very honestly. Yes, I would, as a head coach. I won't think about it. But I've also, there's an unwritten code that we have that we all live by, that if you get knocked out of the lineup by injury, you don't lose your job. You don't lose your position. When you're ready, you come back into the lineup. And that's sort of an unwritten law. But again, having said that, when the team is going so well and you, on the other side of the coin, you don't want to fall into chemistry. It's working. But I mean, when Philip Forsberg is able to play, you're not keeping Philip Forsberg out of your lineup, or Ellis, or on down the line. These guys earned the right to be in that lineup before. So, yeah, there will be changes. But you know what? The energy that we have from these young kids, it's still there. It's not going away. We can plug them back in immediately. And if the guys are not doing it, and Coach Hines has showed, he's not afraid to change them. He's not afraid to put them out there. And last night, he ran out of body, so he goes to the seven defensemen. And it worked perfect for him. So right now, they're pressing all the right buttons.
Crispy, what did you think of that goal last night by Yakov Trenin? I mean, we've talked a lot about that line and the physicality that they brought to the table, but a lot of skill on that play. I was impressed.
He went one-on-one with one of the best young defensemen, DeKaiser, and he just twisted him like a pretzel and then shoots it through the legs in that one. But we've seen him and Olivier and Sissons. I mean, that line, I give them the credit probably in my mind for sparking this hockey club. When we were down and at a low and things weren't going right, that was the energy line. That was the line that Coach Hines went to start every period. When things were flat, he put them out on the ice and turn them and go back-to-back in their rotation with that line. Towards the end of the game, if something needs settled, he'd put that line out there to keep the energy going. So the three of those guys, with Trenin, Olivier, and Sissons, they've done a good job as a unit. I like what I see of that unit.
All right, Crispy, I know you love when I ask you officiating questions. I got one for you because I cannot believe that hit was changed to a minor last night. And frankly, I also liked how Olivier reacted to that. But can you explain that to me?
You know what? I can't. And I just think, you know what? I'm thankful for mute buttons, because I still have my job because of the mute buttons. Because I've never seen anything like it. I mean, it was a blatant run from behind. When you show it, he slammed his head into the boards. And that's the exact thing the league has been cracking down on, wanting to get rid of and do it. And they called a major. So in their mind, when that happened, the refs, or whoever, which ref it was, called it, must have thought it was that bad. But then I said, suddenly, well, what just happened? And I asked somebody, do they go to the war room in Toronto, or the decision room, I guess I should call up in Toronto, and as far as I know, they said, no, the referees on the ice decided. Well, those two referees, whoever decided, you know, it was, that flabbergasted me when they did that. And then they give Hines, Coach Hines, a bench penalty. Now, what do you expect from a coach? And if you're a referee and you have the game and you're confident in your game, you don't go over it and bait a coach. You don't go. You stay away from him. You let him have his interaction. We're going to have one, because I don't blame Coach Hines for getting upset on that one at all. But the referee should have been smart enough to say, we've done the damage, we've changed it around, blah, blah. Go stand somewhere else. Don't stand near the bench. And don't tell me, don't give me this line, well, if we don't go over to the coach, he's going to be mad and say we wouldn't listen. No, that doesn't fly anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it was totally ridiculous yesterday on that call. And by somehow going back and looking at it in slow motion, determining that, oh, it's not as bad in slow motion as we thought it was in regular speed, just ridiculous. Terry Crisp has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, Preds TV analyst. The Preds back in action tomorrow, taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Crispy, great stuff as always, my friend. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
Hey, thank you, guys. We appreciate all you do for us, and stay with us. The boys are on a roll, and hopefully we'll see you all at the Bridgestone. And in the meantime, all your families and everybody out there, please stay safe.
Absolutely. You as well, Crispy. The legendary Terry Criss, our guest, joins us every Friday at 8:30 here on the show. When we come back, we will continue the conversation on the Nashville Predators, react a little bit to what Crispy had to say there, and take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Here's a play across, and a try there by Arvidsson does not go, but on the second try it does, and now the game is tied at one. Predators come back 2-on-1. The shot of the score! Victor Arvidsson makes it 5-1, his second of the night. DeKaiser came back. Here's Arvidsson breaking in, slowing down, backhands, and he scores. Victor Arvidsson scores with a penalty shot, and it's 6-1.
The Hattie for RV.
How rewarding is a night like this to see puck go in for you?
Oh, it's awesome. I almost missed the first one, and it went in. But it's awesome. Like I've been around the net a lot, and I'm trying to create chances and had bounces not going my way, and I think today they did. And I think I played well, and I just got to keep it going. And I got some great passes from Kazi and Louie on the breakout there. So it was nice to see him going. Then I saw her face.
What a performance last night from Victor Arvidsson and the Nashville Predators. They win 7-1 against the Detroit Red Wings. They've won 11 out of their last 13. And big night last night for the Predators, both in their own game and around the league as well. Chicago loses in regulation to the Dallas Stars. Columbus loses to the Tampa Bay Lightning. So right now, the Predators are in the fourth spot in the Central Division, 45 points. They are now 4 points ahead of the Chicago Blackhawks. Dallas with the win now does draw within 7 points of them as well with three games in hand. And now 7 points ahead of the Columbus Blue Jackets as well. So not only do you get the win if you're the Predators last night, but you get a little help from the Stars against the Blackhawks. You get a little help from the Lightning against Columbus. And I guess depending on how worried you are about the Dallas Stars, you can view that as good news or bad news that the Stars were the ones to win last night against Chicago.
I do view it as Sunday night for the Stars has to be
regulation win.
Big, big effort.
Yeah.
You know? And look, I think the Stars actually outplayed the Preds for quite a bit of the last two games they played against each other. So I don't want to say last chance. That's one of those games. If you're them right now, you do have three games in hand. You're 7 points behind. You got to get a regulation win Sunday night here. I still consider them dangerous. There's still enough time for all they've been through. Dangerous enough to get in the playoffs.
And they did have news yesterday that Tyler Seguin is skating. Ben Bishop is skating. Alex Radulov skating on the taxi squad as well. So I have no idea what that means. I have no idea whether or not Tyler Seguin is eventually going to be healthy enough to come back and play. If I'm the Stars at this point, I'd be really careful about that and make sure that he's ready to go for next season. But if he is able to come back and the Stars can hang around, you talk about like a quote-unquote addition after the trade deadline. Getting Tyler Seguin back would be pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, that would be massive. So, it's a big one. You know, Saturday is here you go. Preds red hot. Let's see how you do against the most talented team in the league, the defending champ. But very next night, you got a team coming in that needs that badly. And still, I think if things were to break right, could make a run here.
So I got to thinking about this last night after the game. I mean, I get it. It's the Red Wings. They won 7-1. The Red Wings are awful. And the Predators, they, to their credit, have taken care of business against the Red Wings as of late. But you've won 11 out of 13 overall. I think everybody would agree. I mean, they just look different in the way that they play in terms of a consistent effort from the start of the game to the finish of the game. Now, I'm not saying they're going to win every time from here on out, but the effort, the way they play is a lot more appealing than it was this time a month and a half ago. Are we maybe not giving the Predators enough credit for how dangerous they could be in the playoffs? Because we look at the matchups, and it would either be in the first round, Carolina, Florida, or Tampa Bay, and they would be the underdog in each one of those series to varying degrees on how wide the underdog margin would be there. But they would be the underdog in all three of those series. Are we maybe not giving the Predators enough credit for how dangerous they could be if they continue to play this way heading into the playoffs?
Maybe. I think early on, so look at early on the season, what wasn't going well? Arvidsson was not producing. Okay, he just had a hat trick. Both centers, you know, we talked a lot about Johansson and Duchesne, at least needing more production. I don't think either of them have played poorly, but you just want more production. The goaltending, the penalty kill was awful. The power play was bad. I mean, I feel like the power play is going to be dangerous the rest of the way as long as Elie Tolvanen is in the left circle, yeah. Right? And Forsberg comes back. The penalty kill, I mean, that's the thing about last night is, you know, it ends up 7-1. But at that moment with that horrific call that somehow comes up with them having to, you know, kill off a penalty, that was a big, big kill. It was a very emphatic, yep. Dominant kill too, and it was – I mean, but that has changed.
It's almost
I mean,
like a screw you to the officiating.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's sustainable. The real question is, look, if you want to be a sunshine blower right now and look at how they're playing and say, okay, now add a bunch of talent to that. How could you not even be better and actually dangerous in the playoffs? The question is, and Crispy said it last segment, as a coach, you know, you do look at it and say, what's the balance here? Like, do we lose something? And I'm not saying, look, he mentioned two guys. They're Forsberg, duh.
Yes, you know, he's going to be playing.
Ellis,
and
duh.
He's been a part of this, too.
Yes, Ellis, absolutely. You know, I think Duchesne, too. But I think that's an interesting, like, Granlund as the center of that line has been very good. So what do you do with the lineup? And then who comes out? You know, and what does it mean? If the sunshine blowers are right, it just means that you're a more dangerous team. Everyone's buying in now. Everyone says, this is how we play. I mean, last night, if you're playing a defensive style and you end up with seven goals, like, it can lead to offense if you are good in the defensive zone, you know? So is everyone buying in? And is Saros going to stay this hot? Then, okay, then why couldn't they be dangerous?
Let's go to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jeff texts in, this team is 4-12 against the top of the division. Is there a realistic shot of doing anything against Tampa? No, you sell. I don't get why Nashville fans and media are so overjoyed with being mediocre year after year.
Dang. Well, that's the opposite of the sunshine blower.
Yeah.
And look, that record is absolutely fair to bring up, and it's, again, fair to mention, 9 of these 11 wins, Detroit, Chicago, Dallas.
Also, we've got to get just Tampa out of the minds here. It's right now it's not Tampa. It's Carolina. So I get what you're saying.
Right.
But it's not just Tampa that we're worried about here. Carolina would be the matchup right now.
Yeah.
Not Tampa Bay.
Which doesn't look good either.
Right.
But I would also say, and this is where, I mean, this is going to be really interesting here in the next couple weeks. You know, the way they're playing now, the confidence they have now, the role they're on now, the way Saros is playing now, these things were not in place when they were getting drubbed by those teams early in the season.
Sure.
How much of this success is circumstantial because of who they're playing, and so it helps them give confidence? How much is it just they have just played better and this can be effective against anybody? I don't know. We're about to find out.
Yeah, and we're getting ready to find out tomorrow. Predators taking on Tampa Bay Lightning. So, look, I mean, I think this is going to be an interesting game to monitor from, like, a Preds fans' point of view, because it's the game. I mean, you got this game, the game Sunday, right before the trade deadline. Like, if you come out tomorrow and they lose to Tampa Bay, a lot of Predators fans will be like, oh, hold on a minute now. As fun as this has been, you're losing to Tampa Bay, and let's say they lose by like 2 or 3 goals. Like, you just run out of gas and you get beat at the end of the game. Like, are you in danger at this point? And we've talked about maybe not overreacting to the run that they've been on if you're David Poile, and with the goaltending that they've gotten, maybe not letting that fool you at the trade deadline. Could it also work the other way, where you lose to Tampa Bay and you just totally discount everything that's happened before that if you're a Predators fan or if you're David Poile?
Yeah. I mean, that's why, to me, it's just – I don't think you're overly reactive to whatever happens this weekend. And on Monday, Preds beat Tampa Bay, beat Dallas. That would be, what, 13 of 15?
That would be.
Be one of the – I mean, one of the best stretches of recent years, yeah. all years. I'm still, like, if David Poile then gets a second-round pick from Mikhail Granlund on Monday, great. Best of both worlds. So, to me, like, the idea of selling to help yourself with expiring contracts is absolutely valid no matter what happens this weekend. To your point, like, I don't think that if they have a bad weekend, it's like, okay, let's put Ekholm back on the block. Who knows? Maybe Ekholm gets traded anyway Monday. And it was always going to happen. I don't know. No one seems to think that anymore. But at this point, like, you have to have a bigger picture in mind than whatever happens this weekend, don't you?
So the question now for Predators fans is, do you believe? Do you believe in this Nashville Predators hockey team, winners of 11 out of their last 13 games? And if you do, what sort of damage do you think they could do in the playoffs? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll continue that discussion coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Do you want into Bridgestone Arena for Sunday night's game against Dallas? Caller now to 615-737-1025, and you'll win a pair of tickets to watch the game live in Smashville.
I've got a golden ticket. I've got a golden ticket.
Your home for every moment of Predators action is right here
on ESPN.
1025 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Now at McDonald's, a sausage McMuffin is only $1.50. So stop dreaming about breakfast sausage and go get it. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.